What You Need to Know is presented by Progressive Insurance and our friends at DraftKings. All our guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, like our buddy Kirk Morrison. Mike Trudell is going to join us in less than 15 minutes. We will talk to Mike Trudell. So, Greg, What You Need to Know. We were just talking about it with Kirk. We'll get to the football aspect of this in a second. But the Patriots are opting out. They have six players opting out. How worried are you that football players – that the football season may be suffering some challenges? They may have some hurdles ahead because teams will have important players opt out.
I've said it 1,000 times already, but if you're not in a bubble, I just don't see how the season is going to work fully in any sport whatsoever. More and more guys are starting. I know for the Philadelphia Eagles, Marquise Goodwin just opted out also. Guys are starting to opt out more and more, so I think there should be some worry about the season.
Yeah, I look at it this way, man. And Kirk said he thinks there's going to be more guys, but it's just going to be interesting. The only way this thing – like Dante Hightower is a big-time player for the New England Patriots. They also have a starting offensive lineman. But this only gets rattled, right, if a quarterback opts out. Fair?
Right. Oh, yeah. Once one of those go, then it's going to be like, uh-oh.
That changes everything, right? Because, for example, with like the Dodgers, as much as David Price – is a big-time player, he's still the third guy in your rotation, right? Had it been Walker Buehler or even Clayton Kershaw, the ripple effects would have been larger.
Yeah, Walker Buehler would have been a big-time loss because of how great he's been in the playoffs. So, yeah, once a quarterback goes down, that's when it's going to really start to be an issue for teams.
According to Jeff Passan, speaking of baseball, former Marlins players have tested positive, a total of 17. The Washington Nationals players have voted against going to Miami. Greg, how many games do you think teams are actually going to play this season? If the alleged was 60, right, and they're talking about playing winning percentage or crowning champions or playoff positioning by winning percentage, how many games do you think we'll actually play with all the different postponements?
I'm going to try and be as optimistic as possible about this. So I'm going to say teams are going to play 50 games still. I hope that they continue to play and they can figure it all out and it all starts to work out and they can get to those 50 games. But, I mean, who wants to play the Marlins, period, right now? Like, why would you even want to play anybody on that team when you're just not sure?
Yeah, yeah, I agree 100%. And lastly, Anthony Davis could miss the Lakers opener with an eye injury. It's kind of weird. He got poked in the eye 2 games ago. He looked fine on the sideline of that game. He was dancing around or whatever, but he was, I guess, seen wearing dark glasses. Maybe he's having some issues, according to Dave McMiniman, with his vision, maybe a little blurriness and things like that, and the light is affecting him. If Anthony Davis can't go against the Clippers, how much trouble are the Lakers in?
They're in a lot of trouble. I was watching that game, and James Worthy was talking about it on the broadcast, saying that he had – when he got poked in the eye, I think he said he missed 2 months because it all depended on how you actually get poked in the eye.
Right.
But still, it's like what actually gets hurt. But I'm hoping that everything's okay, because if he's not playing, yeah, that's going to put a lot of extra pressure on LeBron James and a lot of pressure on a lot of other guys because they don't have their leading scorer. It's a huge deal.
That's What You Need to Know, and Mike Trudell will join us in 10 minutes. We'll ask him about Anthony Davis and the latest on that. Trudell will absolutely have some update for us. So we'll talk to Trudell again in 11 minutes. Real quick, I got to talk about Rob Manfred, man. And Rob Manfred seems, to me, incapable of being the commissioner of Major League Baseball, because I just can't fathom someone who can't admit that they were potentially wrong. So, Laura, play me the cut yesterday. He did an interview on MLB Network, and it's the cut about the bubble cut. Play that. It's Tom Verducci on MLB Network asking the commissioner, Rob Manfred, hey, do you feel like maybe you missed the boat on not doing a bubble?
I think the decision that we made with respect to the bubble was the right one. We're different than other sports. We would have had to have multiple locations probably just in order to have enough facilities to make it work. The numbers of people involved and the numbers of people to support the number of players was much, much larger in our sport. The duration would have been much longer. And the longer you go, the more people you have, the less likely it is that you can make the bubble work. You know, I think the NBA NBA and the NHL have an advantage, smaller numbers of players, shorter period of time, and I understand why they did what they did. I'm just not sure it was workable for us.
I don't know if he's being disingenuous, Greg. I don't know if he's being naive, stubborn, or maybe he actually buys what he's selling. But this notion that they couldn't do a bubble in baseball, granted, I know the players didn't want it. But remember, that was when the season was perceived to be a 4 or 5 month season, potentially. Once it was decided, okay, that it was 60 games and 66 nights, there was no reason to at least not broach the subject again, right? And at least bring it up and say, hey, what do you guys think, right? Like, maybe we should do this. This is what the health experts recommend that we do. And again, nothing is foolproof, but it at least gives us a fighting chance to potentially finish the season. Because there's that aspect of it. And then there's this notion about him saying that they have more players and they're not hockey and they're not the NBA. Yes, they have more players than the NBA. The NBA has 17 players on their roster right now in the bubble. But the NHL has about 30 on each roster right now, which is about the amount you're going to have on each Major League Baseball's active roster. So I don't understand that. Like, if hockey can go to Canada and play in Toronto, and where's the other place they're playing, Greg?
Edmonton.
Edmonton, and do, you know, east and west there, and play it out safely in a bubble with 30 guys on each roster, and probably a similar amount of staff as well, then why couldn't Major League Baseball do the same? Rob Manfred, listen, I never thought, Greg, I would see the day, okay? And again, I understand these decisions are tough, man. Like, I get it, okay? I get that these are very difficult decisions that are unprecedented, right? I'm not trying to diminish that fact. But I never thought I'd see the day where I would at least contemplate, not that I think he's worse than him, but contemplate that anyone would be worse at the job than Bud Selig was. And Rob Manfred is like, hold my beer right now.
I mean, I'll go out on the limb and say he is worse than Bud Selig. The things that have happened under Rob Manfred, he has done everything completely wrong.
Well, they but look, Greg, the pandemic thing isn't his fault. You know what I'm saying? Now, we could criticize the way he's handled it, but, you know, Bud Selig didn't have anything like that going on. You know what I mean?
But he's handling it completely wrong. The way that he's not going into bubble, not even broaching it, is ridiculous. He completely 100% mishandled the cheating Astros scandal by not giving it to any players whatsoever. It's a travesty that nobody got. There's nothing is happening to any of these players. And now what he's doing with this is also everything that comes up, even how he negotiated with the Major League Baseball Players Association in the public eye about how going over money and lying to them, saying that, oh, yeah, we'll give you 72 games. No, you were never going to do 72 games. It was always going to be 60. You even said it on an interview right afterwards. Yeah, we were never going to go over 60. So everything he's done has been wrong and has been terrible for the sport and made the sport look worse and worse and worse as we go along. Baseball is going downhill fast.
I mean, he had the power when the four Marlins players tested positive, right? And then it was decided amongst the players via text message to play in Philly that Sunday. Like, how does Rob Manfred, who is the only person in the world who has the power to stop the Marlins from playing Philly that day, right? How does he not exercise that right? Like, I don't understand. He hasn't explained that away, right? And the other part of it is this, speaking of not explaining things, we were just talking about the Astros because the Dodgers are playing the Astros, right? Here's some other things he hasn't explained. We still don't know in regards to the sign-stealing scandal what Major League Baseball knew and when. What teams were involved outside of the Astros and the Red Sox, and, you know, the Yankees were kind of tangentially involved, it seemed like. And what did Major League Baseball do about it at the time when they knew? It seems like he's just covering things up. It reminds me of when Roger Goodell burnt the Spygate tape or threw away that Spygate tapes. Remember that?
Right.
It reminds me of that. Like, it is impossible to understate. Again, understanding that this is not an easy situation to encounter, right? That it's unprecedented. It hasn't happened in 100 years, you know? But it's impossible to understate how terribly and incompetently Rob Manfred has acted here in this situation. And he's not going to resign, but I bet you there's going to be more and more people calling for his head for sure.
Yeah, they got to start calling for his head. I mean, let's go back to the thing with the Phillies and the Marlins where they had the four different players and they let the players choose. You know what that says to me? That says to me that Rob Manfred did not care about the health and safety of the players. He cared about getting the game in and the check that comes from behind about actually playing the game and on television. That seemed more important to him than the health and safety, which is why David Price is not playing this season.
Yeah, man, it's pretty wild, dude. It's just insane when you think about it. The Dodgers and Astros are playing. I'm going on a Houston radio station, okay? And after Trudell at 11:30, I want you guys to call back in at 877-710-ESPN because we're going to do debate prep. Now, we've already got – what do we have, Greg? We have the splits, home road splits of their three best players, right? Altuve, right. Bregman, Correa. What about Springer? Did you look up Springer? You should look up Springer, too.
I will look up Springer. I don't have that
number
off. Because
their home road splits in that World Series are redonkulous, okay? Like, it's not even ridiculous. It's redonkulous, okay? There's such a disparity. It's wild. So I'm going on there, and I'm going to defend the Dodgers' honor. So we're going to debate prep at 11:30. We're going to do some of that. Plus, speaking of defense, we were talking about Roger Goodell. Rob Manfred and his defense, or lack thereof. There are players defending Lou Will, and we'll get to that at 11:30 as well. Eduardo Perez will talk baseball with us, ESPN MLB analyst at 11:40. But Mike Trudell joins us in less than 3 minutes. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive's home insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. And whether you're taking on the trail or the terrace, your deck or your dock hanging out, Nature Valley Crunchy Granola Bars will help you make the most of your outdoor time because a crunchy bar tastes like summer wherever you are. Mike Trudell going to join us here in a second. Laura, do we have him? Great. He'll give us the Straight Talk brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Trudell, before I get into any of the basketball stuff with you, we were just talking about Rob Manfred's incompetence and just kind of how all of this has kind of unfolded in Major League Baseball. My biggest bone of contention with him is I know the players didn't want a bubble because it would have, in theory, initially been 4 or 5 months, maybe even 6 months, maybe longer, right, depending on the playoffs. And I get that. That's totally fair. That's a long time. But when it was down to 60 games and 66 nights, I felt like he should have revisited that. He was on MLB Network yesterday, and Tom Verducci, who's amazing, right, asked him that question, like, hey, did you kind of blow it by not kind of revisiting that? And here's what he said.
I think the decision that we made with respect to the bubble was the right one. We're different than other sports. We would have had to have multiple locations probably just in order to have enough facilities to make it work. The numbers of people involved and the numbers of people to support the number of players was much, much larger in our sport. The duration would have been much longer. And the longer you go, the more people you have, the less likely it is that you can make the bubble work. You know, I think the NBA and the NHL have an advantage, smaller numbers of players, shorter period of time, and I understand why they did what they did. I'm just not sure it was workable for us.
So Trudell, I think he's either being naive, stubborn, disingenuous, or maybe he actually believes the stuff he's saying, but it's one of those four options because the NHL is got two sites and they have 30 players on each roster. Right now on the active MLB roster, there's 30 guys. They've upped it by 5 guys. So I don't see where that is an issue when he talks about roster size, maybe compared to the NBA, sure. And length, I mean, again, you're doing – it might be a little longer than what the NBA goes, which is going to end up being 3 months through the championship. But your regular season is going to be about 2 months and change. So it's not going to be that much longer anyway. But what do you make of just all of this with baseball?
Yeah, George, the thing that I was originally expecting was they would use the spring training facilities basically, and they'd have like half the league in Florida and half the league in Arizona, and they could bounce around to a couple of the stadiums maybe, and you'd figure that they would have enough places for people to stay, just given wherever all of the spring training sites typically are, and you know they could bus back and forth to the different spots. So that to me seemed like it made a lot of sense. Now, not knowing a lot about whatever the planning was, it just seemed like they never really went too far down that road. And as you and I know, the NBA, like the guys that we know at the league office, I mean, we're talking like 20-hour days for months, yeah, figuring out the Orlando bubble. And just a ton of work that the NBA put in that is obviously paying off now. You know, and we always have to kind of knock on wood to hope that it continues this way. But it does seem like that's a leadership type thing. That's Adam Silver and the executive league, the ownership, who really thoughtfully planned this out. They thought as much as they could about how to deal with this from a COVID-19 perspective, and it does not seem like baseball put in that same amount of thought, does it?
No, not at all. Not at all. Let's talk basketball because people want to hear your thoughts on the Lakers. What's up with Anthony Davis's eye, man? Did you send him those sunglasses or what?
So Vogel had a Zoom call this morning, just the typical one after practice, and I asked him about AD first, obviously. That's the one sort of thing that we're not sure about going forward. And he said he didn't practice today, and he's still experiencing a little bit of discomfort. I know you probably talked about that earlier in the show. So we asked, okay, well, is it possible that he wouldn't play Thursday? And he said that it is possible. It's a concern, but he's hopeful he can play. And so I don't know anything beyond that, George. Just the fact that he's still continues to be around the team, that he came out for halftime of the game after he got poked in the eye. I took those to be good signs. Just thinking, like, if it was something that seemed to be more serious, maybe you would treat it more seriously. But we don't know. We have to wait and sort of see how he feels tomorrow, if he practices or not. And then, again, we'll see about the game. But here's the one thing to keep in mind. The Lakers, and you and I have talked about this before, it's not like they have to win these games. I think they want to compete hard, play hard, get these guys back in shape. But they do have some time here, thanks to that 5.5 game lead that they have in the West.
So let me ask you this. Who has impressed you the most during these scrimmages? Give me like a power ranking of guys.
Okay, I mean, so... In terms of this
beyond one, LeBron. Beyond LeBron.
Yes. So I'll just say, I guess let's do it the way that we do, like, Coach of the Year, right, where it's the guy whose win total was higher than you expected. So, you know, okay. So LeBron we expect to be great, right?
Right.
And so I'll give him the A grade that he always gets.
Right.
But the guy that I think represents the most upside for the Lakers, and we certainly saw this in the second game, is Kuz. You know, he's the one that I've heard the most about from how he's looked in practice. And I think there's a pretty good and easy explanation. So Kuz missed the entire preseason. He was the only guy on the roster because he had that injury to his foot from Team USA. And he didn't really get going even once he returned to play 5 games into the season because he's coming off the bench behind LeBron and AD. He didn't get the minutes he got last year. He didn't get the shots he got last year. And he focused more on defense and some of the intangible things that the coaching staff, that LeBron and AD and those guys had asked him to do. So now, all of a sudden, he gets these 4 months. He's fully in shape. He's been working on his shot because they haven't been able to do much besides shoot. His base looks better when he rises to take the shot, and he's got that confidence and that scoring swag back. Plus, he's going to eat up more minutes because you have no Avery Bradley, no Rondo in the rotation. And so, like, to me, that's the guy I think that you'll see the biggest leap from what we saw in the regular season to where he can be moving forward, George.
Well, and that's important. They're going to need that. And, you know, look, I know that they've wanted to use him, and his numbers have been distributed pretty evenly with both those guys, as in LeBron and AD on the floor, and, you know, non-LeBron AD minutes for Kuz. But the minutes that he's been on the floor with both those guys, the notion that he hasn't been that good with those guys on the floor, I feel like it's overstated. And the reason is this. When he's on the floor with both those guys, I've got the numbers here in front of me. 233 minutes, usage rate is only 17.5%, which is expected. He only gets about 12 shots up per 36, but he's shooting 35% from three. Not great, but at least doable, right? Salvageable. But when those guys are off the floor, it's almost like he feels like he has to do too much. 256 minutes, 29% usage, 21 shot attempts per 36 minutes, and only 25% from three. Like, when LeBron and AD are on the floor, he gets easy baskets at the rim, and he's great above the break on the right side specifically, and he shoots the ball at a pretty decent clip. But I think that the notion that he can't play with those two guys, I feel like that's just out of whack. That's not what the numbers say.
No, of course. I agree with all of that. And I think you may have mentioned that on the national show you were hosting the other day, and I was sitting at home kind of nodding. I was like, yeah, George, that's right, buddy. Way to do that research. I mean, with part of what you're talking about, too, though, is that Frank Vogel, for very good reason, stayed big this year. It was either Dwight or JaVale that was on the court. In the preseason, you and I spent some time talking about this. Like, we expected they were going to go small a lot more, and that was going to be the time for Kuz to get on the floor with LeBron and AD. So it still was a small sample size, even with what you just mentioned. But I will also say this, when you're on the floor with those two guys, almost everybody's numbers are going to go up because it means more open shots.
Right.
And it's also going to get, like, the fact that he wasn't able to do it as much meant that he, when he was coming into the game and one of them were sitting, I think you're right that he was pressing a little bit because he wanted to find his rhythm, and not just like selfishly, because the team needs him to get into a good rhythm at some point. So all of these things can be true. And the bottom line is Kuz is better than what his numbers were this year. And if it doesn't take that much exploration to figure out why his numbers were down.
What do you make of the J.R. Smith play thus far? He had a big game last night, or yesterday, excuse me, and Deion Waiters, who's had some pretty good games too.
So Smith, I think, is a real simple answer, in that he looked good. Like, he looks like he's been playing NBA basketball. He's got a good rhythm about him with the shot. Like, the release looks good. All that stuff. You're just asking him to come in and be our J.R. Smith in spot moments, I think, once you get everybody back and playing a full rotation. But the guy that excites me a little bit more has been Waiters. And I know you are familiar with Waiters from his time in Miami, and you may have that's sort of a different way to color everything. But what I've been looking for all season is who off the bench can come in as a guard and create their own shot. And that's just, there hasn't really been somebody on the roster that does that, because you had, for the most part this season, it was Caruso, Rondo, and KCP who are coming off the bench in that backcourt rotation. And that's not what those guys do. Now, they can do it at times, but that's like what Waiters was born to do. That's what he loves to do. He gets the ball. He maybe crosses you over a couple times. He uses that body and he bumps you off for a jump shot, and he can get a clean release, or he gets by you and goes to the rim and can either finish at the rim, again, using that big body, or he can kick it out. So, like, that's a skill set that the Lakers didn't have much of. And I thought it made a lot of sense when Rob Pelinka signed him back in March. So, like, that to me is the area where I think you might see in a playoff game, as the defense gets better and LeBron's on the bench getting his few minutes of rest. And that's the time where, you know, where you throw Waiters out there and say, hey, look, go create us a shot, like, against a good set defense. And I think that's going to be a very important thing, George.
Well, here's the thing about Waiters, okay? And the problem with Waiters isn't his skill set. It's been very rare that it's been his skill set, although he does take ill-advised shots. Like, there's no denying that, and I don't think you can teach an old dog new tricks, and he's no longer a young puppy. But despite that, the problem with him has always been that kind of the 6 inches in between the ears, right? Like, where he thinks he's better than he is. And that always ends up becoming a problem, particularly for the coaching staff. And then eventually it trickles down to the players. But he's going to be on his best behavior with the Lakers, because this could be his last stop. If he performs poorly or becomes a disruption, I don't see very many teams taking a chance on him moving forward, as that sounds.
But here's the difference, though. Like, if you're depending, a guy like that, right? If you're depending on him and he's your starting two, or even your backup guard that's going to get X minutes per night, and you need him to play the right way all the time, and like what you're asking him to do, in my opinion, is come in and like literally just create shots. Do that. Do you, man? Like in a high leverage moment, especially, you want an irrational confidence guy. So, like, that to me is where Frank Vogel's been so good this year, is that since you have your two superstars, everybody else in the team, it's, like, implicit and explicit what you're supposed to do when you're in the game. But for Deion, it's like, yeah, man, look, go get us a bucket or two. Like, that's fine. It's not, you're not asking him to do more, to do what you asked Danny Green or KCP to do, you know, which is to space the floor and move the ball and, like, get back in transition defense, all of the stuff that you really need for 30-plus minutes a game. Waiters, you just need to go in and get your bucket once in a while.
Yeah, no, I get that. Right. Yeah, and they don't have that. The roster has lacked a guy who can create without having LeBron have to feed him, or Rondo, or one of the other guards who can get the ball to someone. He literally can isolate on his own and get his own shot. There is no question about it. I just don't know how much I trust him in a high leverage situation, even though he does have the irrational confidence. And in theory, so you want that.
You must not have been watching these scrimmage games. Deion taking the Lakers home, baby.
It is just a scrimmage. Let's calm down just
three
a little
daggers,
bit. I will tell you this. As crazy as this sounds, I would trust JR more than I would trust Deion in those situations. Because at least JR's been in a bunch of high leverage situations. Deion has not.
Yeah, just bottom line is what we've seen so far, scrimmages or not, has been good, right? It's been good from those guys. It's been good from Kuz. I think like it's been the whole thing overall. And one of the benefits I think that they get as a team, and I'll sort of hijack the question, like the bench and the fact that they're all so into it. The people that are there keep texting me that the Lakers are like by far the loudest of any of the teams. And like, they're the most engaged, they're the most into it. It filters down from LeBron and they're having fun. So like, that to me is going to make up a little bit for this home court advantage that they're not going to have. That was going to be a big deal at Staples.
What do you make of the situation that they've got now since Bradley's not going to be there? I know we've talked about Deion and JR, but my guess is you're going to see more KCP, who's played well. You're going to see some more Caruso, who played well yesterday as well. I like the lineups. I'm going to give you some more numbers. I like the lineups with LeBron, AD, Caruso, and KCP. Those lineups, I did the math here for you. Check this out. So that lineup, okay, Davis, LeBron, KCP, Caruso, just those four grouping, that four as a group together, have played 109 minutes together this season and have recorded a plus 16.5 net efficiency and a defensive efficiency of 88.5. That's the sixth best defensive efficiency among 825 four-man lineups to play at least 100 minutes this season together. And to there, at that point, it's just about who you want to put out there with them. If you want more defense, you probably go with Danny Green, because their defense efficiency actually drops even further, another half point from there, which is incredible. Or if you want more offense, strangely enough, you would go with Dwight Howard, because it gives you that vertical spacer that they have, because they have a much better offensive rating with that four and Dwight Howard than they do with Danny Green. Not to say that Danny Green's offensive efficiency numbers aren't good, but Dwight's are through the roof at 117.6. So I feel like that core group of those four should probably be the unit they start with, you know, whether it's Dwight or JaVale, whatever they want to do. But that four of LeBron, Davis, KCP, and Caruso, what do you make of that group?
Well, so first of all, if you put Caruso into any grouping, you're going to have a good net rating. And you can see it. Like, his net rating with LeBron is plus 20.8, best two-man unit in the NBA. He's going to balance out a lot of the things that, as being a glue guy that does so many good things on both ends of the court. His own net rating is 10th in the NBA. It's tied with LeBron. I think it's like plus 10.5 or something. So that's part of it. And you're not wrong with that grouping. But I think you can put Danny Green into that same KCP role, or you can play him together on opposite wings and get that same kind of formula. And then the only question is, if you want AD at the five, then you can have Kuzma in, or if you want AD at the four, and as you mentioned, you could have Dwight. So like, they have a lot of different ways that they can go. And as long as it's LeBron, AD, either KCP or Danny Green, and then again, on certain times you want Caruso. Other times, if you're looking for a little more shooting, you can play Green and KCP together. But Vogel's got a lot of areas that he can go to there. And you're not wrong. Like, that four-man grouping is up there, but I think you could put Green in and have a pretty similar output as well.
What is the projected role for Markieff Morris?
So Morris was playing pretty regularly in the rotation in March there, where he was the backup four, playing next to Dwight, and then Kuz was playing the three. And so what I'm not sure is, like, how often do you want Kuz on the wing versus him playing that backup four? And in that case, you could pinch a couple of Morris's minutes. But, like, I do think he's going to be getting minutes every game. Like, what I don't know is if it's 10 minutes for kind of that quick bench stint, or if it's 20 certain times if he's getting going and he's really shooting the basketball well. But, yeah, you have to include him, I think, when you think about the 10-man grouping that Vogel's going to go to. I just think that if you're going to squeeze it down to eight, my three guys off the bench would be Caruso, Kuz, and Dwight. Like, that would be the eight. And then if you want to talk about the 9-10, that's maybe where you get into Waiters, and maybe you get into Morris, and maybe in a certain circumstance, Quinn Cook, if you're just looking for the pure shooting. But that to me is, he's borderline there, George, or he's not quite in that eight, but he's right there on the precipice of it.
But you could probably go super small with him too. Like, I know AD, since he doesn't love to play center, you could still go with Markieff technically as your five, have AD stay at the four, LeBron, and then, you know, some shooters around those two guys, and have a really good shooting lineup.
Yeah, you're right. And that's again where I think that the Waiters inclusion in this, and the one thing they didn't have with that shot creation, that helps you, because then you can go anywhere you want to in the front court. And honestly, you can almost play Kuz at the two or the, like, depending on the matchup, right? If it's a guy that's not really going to break you down off the dribble with the two,
right, but
it's more of a space shooter, like the opponent's version of KCP or Danny Green, Kuz can guard those guys just fine too. So you can go big there, be really good on the glass, and then be quote unquote smaller with LeBron, Markieff Morris, and AD. It, like, it's there, George, you and I are going to have to be plugged into our NBA.com advanced stats page for this lineup data, because there's so many different ways that Vogel can go. And I just think the simplest way I can think of to describe it is, as long as you have two superstars, like two top five players, most of that stuff's going to be pretty good around it.
Did you see what Portland was doing in their last game what I think is to try to combat the Lakers front line? Did you see that they played Whiteside and Nurkic together?
Yes, and I don't think that's the best way to combat the Lakers front line. I get that they were going to take a look at it. I think it's more often going to be Zach Collins next to Nurkic, but it's going to be weird with Whiteside because he actually played pretty well, at least statistically. I know he had his issues.
All right. This is you selling Whiteside because you had him on your fantasy team this year.
Well, look, I had him in both leagues, and I did happen to win both leagues, and he was a key piece. But I know you saw the same thing, like from Waiters. You saw him in Miami last year. I do think it's going to be tricky, though, to play both him and Nurkic. Like, they're not the same as Dwight and JaVale, where they're sort of, they know what their role is going to be going in, and they might play 20 minutes, they might play 10. So that, to me, is a bit of an issue for Portland.
Yeah, look, Nurkic is a way better player than him. It's not even, yes. I don't even think it's close, to be honest with you, between
no,
the two. What Whiteside is good at is just, you know, he's a stat guy. Like, he gets rebounds, you know, he blocks shots. But as far as, like, affecting winning, like, Nurkic is a much better player as far as affecting winning. Like, just last year, the Blazers' defense or net efficiency as a team was 10.5 with Nurkic on the court. This season, it's 2.3 with Whiteside on the floor. Like, that's a huge, huge gap. But is there a team in the eighth spot that you look to yourself and say, I'd like to see that matchup because I think it'll be fun. But also, is there a matchup you think that would be maybe a little more challenging for the Lakers of all the potential teams that could come out of that play-in scenario for the eighth spot?
Yeah, I mean, the two teams that would be really good historically for an eight seed would be a healthy Pelicans team or a healthy Blazers team. Like, that's thinking about what you have in the East, right? Where you have like Brooklyn and in Orlando in those two spots. I mean, those are real teams who, if healthy throughout the season, you know, could have been closer to that 4 or 5 potentially. So, but at the same time, there's a very clear gap between the Lakers, the Clippers, and those teams.
Yeah.
So I don't think that any of those teams are going to beat the Lakers by any means. Could they get a game or two off them? Possibly. But the team that is the easiest matchup would, I think, obviously be Memphis, just based on their youth and personnel. And then I think the team that probably, if you had to pick who's the biggest challenge, it probably would be Portland if Lillard is healthy. I know that, you know, he's had a foot issue that they're dealing with right now. But, yeah, man, the short answer would be Portland, New Orleans would be the biggest challenge. But I don't think they could beat the Lakers.
No.
I agree.
Mike Trudell, follow him on Twitter at Lakers Reporter, and Mike Trudell. You can follow him on both handles. He's got two different handles. You're that important that you have two different handles.
Well, you know, look, one's Lakers only, and the other has a couple things here and there. Yeah, that's all.
It has more musings from Mike Trudell. If you like musings from Mike Trudell, you can follow at Mike Trudell. But if you want just your Laker diehard stuff, you go to at Lakers Reporter. Real quick. Laura likes going to the dentist. Do you like going to the dentist?
Of course not.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
She also doesn't like chocolate.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like cheese, and I get a lot of heat for that.
Uh-oh.
I'm not going to judge some.
I know. The last time we encountered each other, I offered you some cheese, some high-end cheese, and you ate it, and it looked like I was giving you, like, medicine when you were 5.
Yeah, right. I was like your son. Actually, I was gonna say I was like your son, but he seems to pretty much like everything.
He eats everything.
But no.
Unlike you.
So, look, everybody has their things. I have a bad sweet tooth. So these things are related, right? I don't like going to the dentist in part because of all the sugar I've consumed over all these years. Means that more often than not, I'm having cavities removed.
Yeah.
In related news, I love chocolate. Do not like cheese, but I'm not going to judge somebody else on what.
All right, so I'm going to let Laura judge you. Laura, since we've been judging you, will you judge Trudell on the cheese?
George,
do you think
judge
that's
George,
weird?
I didn't judge you.
Do do you think, Lord, do you think it's weird that Trudeau can't eat cheese and that when I gave him a piece of cheese, he acted like a five-year-old being forced to drink medicine?
It's gross.
Because he didn't judge me, I'm not going to judge him. I'll let him do him. But if he would have judged me, there would have been some judgment there.
Okay, fair enough. You guys
that's
have
good, that's a good metaphor. That's a good metaphor for how to treat people in the world right there, George.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys have formed a truce. I like it. Yeah. 710 ESPN is presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests like Mike Trudell appear via the Shell Penzo Performance Line. Trudell, stay healthy, stay safe, brother. We'll talk to you soon. All right, man. There he is, Mike Trudell. Coming up in 3 minutes, we will talk to Eduardo Perez. Eduardo Perez, ESPN MLB analyst. Was on First Take this morning. He calls games. Talk to him about the Dodgers. Talk to him about what's going on in baseball, this whole mess. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN. Presented by Progressive Insurance and Pennzoil Synthetic Motor Oils. Made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil. Based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30. And don't forget to listen to ESPN Audio at Home via your smart speaker. ESPN Audio at Home brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Vans. Drive a Mercedes-Benz van and find out how far an extra mile really goes. From customization to service to financial assistance, Mercedes-Benz vans are ready for anything. All right, Major League Baseball may be ready for everything and anything. They may need to be. And Eduardo Perez joins us here now, ESPN MLB analyst, one of the best in the business, calling games, analyzing games, joins us here, old buddy of mine. Eduardo, what kind of arroz con mango is Major League Baseball in right now?
that's a nice way of putting it, by the way. Arroz con mango, I would say another word, but it's all right. It's all good. We'll go with that. You know, having and living in Miami right now, it's just not good right now. The situation here where we see the Washington Nationals voting and saying no to Miami. And it's just sad right now to be able to see 17 players test positive for the Miami Marlins. And I know they're down right now. This is a team that was playing pretty darn good baseball in Philly. And to come up with this and after a really big comeback win for them, it's this one hurts. This one hurts. But at the end of the day, all we're trying to do is, and this is the main goal, this year, it's not to me. This year is not about winning a championship as much as it is fighting and beating our invisible opponent that is kicking the world's butt, and it's kicking the butt, especially here in the state of Florida and in the city of Miami-Dade County. And right now, the Marlins, you know, they could have gotten it in Miami, they could have gotten it in Atlanta, they could have gotten it on the plane. That's the scary part. That's why I was always an advocate for. Let's try to make sure that if we're going to divide this in threes, that we don't have to put guys on planes, that we can secure guys in communities where we know that they're not going to be being exposed to any outsider. I'm not saying in a complete bubble, but I'm saying just to make sure that the players were following protocol, not only on the field, in the stadiums, but outside the ballpark. Because there's a lot at risk, and it's not only about the players. This is about the coaches. This is about the front office personnel. This is about the trainers, the traveling secretary, who is, to me, the most important person and the liaison between the front office and the players. Those are the guys that are putting their necks out on the line to make sure that this game is being played. And unfortunately, we've seen in the last 2 days the Miami Marlins, Baltimore Orioles, same thing, you know, that were here in Miami. They already flew back to Baltimore. Yankees in Philly and Philadelphia not being able to play.
Yeah, it's wild. I'll tell you this. I am in favor of a bubble. The NBA is doing it, which is the sport I cover the most.
How are you going to do it?
Okay,
because everybody has this great plan. And sorry, I know this is your show.
No.
I know my time is limited. But, George, this is where the arroz con mango comes in. How are you going to do it?
Well,
it's not only 30 players. It's 60 players. It's not only 60 players. It's the front office personnel that has to run all this thing. It's baseball. It's played outdoors. It's not indoors. It's not a 15-man roster with maybe 10 extra personnel. This is a different beast, and we play baseball every day. How are we going to do that?
Eduardo, my understanding is it's a 30-man roster at the moment that's active and in the ballpark. So
okay.
If that – hold on. If that's the case
right? –
The NHL is doing a bubble. They have 30-man rosters. They're in Canada right now in Toronto and Edmonton. The MLS, the soccer, they've got 25 guys in a roster.
No, they're not. You're wrong. They don't have 30-man rosters. What about
in the NHL? I'm looking at it. I can see the roster in front of me.
You're looking at it, but let's not forget the 60-man, because I'm not counting just the active roster. I'm counting about the other 30. That in baseball, it's needed, because Verlander goes down for a non-related COVID issue, is a forearm. All of a sudden, you have another injury over there. You have another injury over here. How are you going to be able to fit, mix and match? Look what happened to Kershaw. Kershaw went down, and we can talk local here in L.A. Kershaw goes down. Here comes the rookie coming in, throwing cheese, because they activated him from the roster, right? Am I not mistaken?
Yeah, they activated for the roster.
And if he's not in that area, in that bubble, we're talking about 60 men. I want to protect all 60, not just 30 from the active roster.
Yeah, but they don't have all. Dale, go finish. I'm sorry.
Because that's the thing. Yeah, they don't have them all in the same ballpark, but you still have to be able to protect them as soon as, because they might be needed that next day. You can't just quarantine them for 3 days and say, okay, play without this guy for 3 days. Because what you're doing is putting the health of other players at risk.
Right, but the other 30 players, hold on.
They play hockey every day.
Eduardo, what I'm saying is the other 30 players in Major League Baseball are not, since they're not there, they're in an alternative training site.
Exactly.
And so they can still be
in a bubble. You needed them there.
But they
need them there if you're going to put them in a bubble.
No,
you need them there.
What you do is you create your own mini bubble at these alternative training sites, and you keep those guys secure in those situations. You keep the 30 up wherever you're going to do it, in Florida, Arizona, Texas, wherever the hell you wanted to do it. And you do it that way. The notion that go ahead.
This sounds like a bubble bath, man. You're going to create many bubbles here, many bubbles there.
Well, do you want the most safest way to do it or no?
I want the most safest way to do it.
Then that's the way you got to do it.
But the cost of this, but economically, is it at the end of the day, NBA created a bubble because they knew that they needed to finish out the season for the RSNs, right, for the regional sports networks to be able to kick in. And then that way, they're at the end of their season.
The regular season part of it, yes. Yeah, the regular season part of it.
Right. They're at the end of the season. NHL's at the end of their season. Baseball's not at the end of their season. It's a different beast. It's a different map. It really is.
No, but
I mean, it's unfortunate. Go ahead.
I understand. Look, initially, when it was 4 or 5 months, potentially, right? Like if they were going to play 100-plus games or whatever. But when you've narrowed it down to 60 games and 66 nights by the commissioners, those are the commissioners' words. At that point, right, what I'm saying is, shouldn't you at least revisit the concept a little bit?
I would. I'll tell you this. The Marlins are going to have a tough time playing here in Miami.
Yeah.
They're going to have a tough time because as soon as the Nationals said no, other teams will follow. And if I'm Miami, I'm looking for an alternate site that I can bus to places.
Yeah.
This is one thing that I advocated long ago. I thought the National American League should have just been X-made. I personally, and I said this from the beginning, and I said it on my radio show on Sirius XM, I said we should have the Florida, the Cactus League, the Grapefruit League, and the Cactus League. And each team should take accountability within their spring training sites. And you play 15 teams in Arizona, 15 teams in Florida. You create a championship league there. You create a league in both sides, and then you play a championship series in Texas. That way you would minimize the flying time, because I really personally believe that getting on an airplane was going to be an issue.
I agree.
This is week one.
Yeah.
The first weekend, the Marlins get on two flights. They get on a flight from Miami to Atlanta. They get on another flight from Atlanta after they played the summer camp game. After that, which there was zero protocol anyway in Atlanta, when it rained, most of the players were in the dugout because there was no tarp above the dugout to protect the players. So they were all in the dugout. And then after that, they got on a flight to go to Philadelphia. That's too many people breaking protocol from what it should be. There's no right or wrong answer here right now, because at the end of the day, this thing is kicking everybody's butt. And we're still trying to figure it out. But what we can do is try to make sure that all the players and personnel are safe.
And I just thought minimizing getting on a plane is the best way to go.
I agree wholeheartedly. It's funny. People are hitting me up on Twitter and be like, yo, man, you guys are going at it. I'm like, no, bro, that's just how Latino people do it.
No, that's how people
talk. All right, let's talk some real baseball here. How worried are you about Kershaw's injury history? This is now four back injuries in the last five injuries overall in the last 7 years, and several of them have been back injuries. How worried are you about him in the long run here?
I've always been concerned about Clayton Kershaw with his back ever since it happened. I remember a couple years ago, I took a lot of heat for not putting him in my top 10 pitchers. And the reason I didn't do that was because it wasn't because of his stuff. It was because of his health. It was because of availability. Availability is the best asset a player has. And him not being available, that just downgrades who Clayton Kershaw is. Now, this year we have 12 starts that starters could possibly make in a 60-game season. He's probably not going to even make six. Maybe he'll make eight of those starts, depending. He had long coughs the other day. Hopefully he's better. But with a back, you never know. It feels great for 10 days. Or it could feel great until you wake up that morning and all of a sudden you're not back out there. It's tough right now to be able to be, to put myself in Clayton Kershaw's shoes. But I'll tell you this, when healthy, the guy's legit. The problem is that back is always going to be a concern. And this is one part where I feel for him because if there was a guy that I would love to play behind, it's Clayton Kershaw. Not only when he's on the mound, but also in the dugout because he's always talking with everyone and you can see that there's a lot of energy there and you want to follow that. And I hope for the Dodgers' sake that Clayton Kershaw, and it's not that I'm a Dodgers fan because I am not, but I would love to see Clayton Kershaw win a championship with an LA Dodger uniform because of what he's meant to the game all these years on and off the field.
Yeah, no question about it. Mookie Betts and Cody Bellinger, in theory, both MVP candidates. From a 1-2 punch perspective, as far as how potent both guys could be, like, what is the comparison in your mind of having those two guys near the top of the order?
I think it's phenomenal to have those two guys at the top of the order, but I'll tell you this, your best player this year is going to be Corey Seager.
Really?
To me, he has the best chance to be the MVP of the season. He has the best chance because everybody's going to be focused the same way you are right now, the same way everybody else is. On Mookie Betts, the way he runs the bases, the way he plays defense, the way he can hit. He does everything right. Cody Bellinger does everything right. But Corey Seager is – everybody's going to forget. And next thing you know, he's going to be the beneficiary of guys on base. He's going to produce. From what I've seen, he looks healthy. He looks stronger. This is the first year that he was able to take an off season, train, and get ready for the baseball season. Not that he had a rehab for the baseball season. Let's not forget, Corey Seager was the guy everybody talked about after 2015 when he had 98 at-bats or so, and he hit .337. And then his game went down after 2017. Why? Because in 2018, he only played 26 games. He got hurt. He came back last year, but I'm telling you, Corey Seager is going to be a beast for these next 2 months, and he'll be a beast as long as he stays healthy because of the way he's able now to drive the ball to left field like he always has when he's healthy.
Eduardo Perez, one of the best in the business at covering Major League Baseball, ESPN MLB analyst. Check him out on Games or on SportsCenter, even on First Take. He was on there today. Oye, I got to run because we're up against it. I love you. Te quiero. Send your best.
Same here. And fans, I still love this guy. I still answer his calls. I still do. I love him. Even though he's wrong, I still love him.
Oye, say hi to Papi for me too, okay?
You got it, brother.
All right, brother. Take care. There he is, Eduardo Perez here on the Sedano Show on 710 ESPN. Son of Hall of Famer Tony Perez, which is why I said say hi to Papi for me before he left. Thanks to Eduardo Perez. Thanks to Mike Trudell, thanks to Kirk Morrison for joining us earlier. Thanks to Laura and Greg. Thanks to you guys for calling in, tuning in each and every day. If you missed any part of the show, subscribe to the podcast, Sedano Show. We love you. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 10 with Momo in tomorrow as well with me. See ya.